Well, we started Lent yesterday with Ash and the poignant reminder that we are dust and shall return to dust. The unspoken part of that, of course, is that God is the creator and we are God's creatures. And that's a big part of what's going on in today's reading from Genesis as well. As God's creatures depart from the ark after the flood and face a renewed world, God has for them literally recreated the world by using a flood to sweep away the old and give birth to the new. And now they're about to discover what it might mean to live in that renewed world. And there are some, I think, really important and significant things that this text says about their situation and to us about our situation as well. But I want to get to them by going the long way round, as it were. The flood story as we have it today was written down in this form long after the events it records. As far as our best scholarship can tell, the text as we have it today was more or less knocked into shape in about the 6th century BC by Jewish scribes and scholars who were living in exile in Babylon. So as we read this story, it might help us to read it kind of on different historical levels. What was it saying about the time of Noah immediately after the flood? What was it saying about the time of the exile when this story was so important they wrote it down in this way? And what might it be saying about our own time and situation? But let's start in exile in Babylon. In that time and place, Jews were a conquered minority struggling to maintain their own distinctive identity while living in an empire which did not share their culture, their language, or their religion. We don't know everything about the religion of ancient Babylon, but one of the things we do know is that there was an annual festival in which sacrifices were made to the gods in order to save the world from the destructive force of the goddess of ocean and flood and chaos. The Jews, as worshippers of Yahweh, did not obviously participate in that festival and those sacrifices. But how did their religion answer the fear of the goddess of flood and chaotic destruction? Because that's the big active religious fear, if you like, in their landscape. And I think we see part of the answer in the fact that the Noah story was so important to them. They told and retold and wrote down this story, incorporating it into some of their most important texts, because it said some important things. That their God was the one in control of the waters and the floods, and that their God had promised safety from the flooding waters. Never again, says God in this text, shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. Instead, God promises every living thing, not just the Jews, but the Babylonians too, and everyone else, safety, at least safety from this threat, and puts a visible reminder of that promise in the sky for everyone to see. So the message is, you don't need to go and sacrifice in the Babylonian temple to be safe from dying in a flood. You can look at the rainbow and know that God has promised safety to every living person and animal. So you can see how for the exiles, this would have been a powerfully important text and a really encouraging image to hold on to. Just as it would have been for the survivors of a cataclysmic flood that had wiped out the whole world, at least as far as they could see it. What about us, though? We're not surrounded by a culture which fears chaotic flooding as a force of the gods. And while we have anxieties about our environment, right now it's more likely to be bushfires on our minds than ocean wiping out the world. Does God's promise to never again wipe out every living thing in a flood still matter to us? I suspect it can, but I think we need to go a layer deeper and notice some of what this promise tells us about God. And I want to point out the covenant language in this passage. A covenant is an agreement or a bond between at least two parties. The closest related idea in our culture might be a contract. But it's more binding, more of a commitment of our whole selves than what we usually mean by a contract. It might be closer to think of it as what happens when a couple marry and pledge themselves to each other for as long as they both shall live. It's that kind of sense of commitment of self in a covenant. And here is God making a covenant in which God promises God's creatures, those fragile little mortal breathing dust critters, safety. God binds God's self to us with an inviolable promise of safety. God takes the initiative. God creates the relationship. God sets in place the parameters in which that relationship is one we can trust and in which we can flourish. Because there's no more fundamental need than safety. And I think maybe this is where this story can still speak powerfully to us today, to help us see the portrait those exiled scholars so painstakingly put together for us, of a God who not only creates us but then wants relationship with us, sets in place the conditions in which that relationship can be a nurturing and a sustaining reality, and gives us a promise of safety. Isn't that a God worth knowing? A God who wants relationship with us, who creates the conditions where we can relate meaningfully and safely with God, and within that, with each other as well, and who looks to our safety because, not that the text says this outright, but I think it's pretty heavily implied, because God loves us. So, the beginning of Lent, we are dust, but we are living, breathing, thinking, feeling dust. And here's the wonder of it, animated dust whose creator reaches out to us in love and care. Seeking relationship and putting in place the foundations of that relationship so that we can respond in love and safety. So maybe it's worth pondering this week how we respond to a creator whose fundamental covenant promise to every living thing is, you are safe.